B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Maz.
You're going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'm curious if by not selecting a quarterback, that says something about the confidence you have in the current quarterback room with Jared and Brian.
I like both those players. We've had Brian a couple times, and I think, he certainly gives us a very solid level of play, and we have a lot of confidence in him. And Jared had a good year last year. He improved a lot, and we'll see where that takes him. So, yeah, I have confidence in both players.
Our number three, Felger and Maz, Reentry Monday, presented by East Boston Savings Bank. I'm coming to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Maz and Murray on location. Maz, what did the lack of quarterback selection say to you coming out of this weekend?
Well, to me, again, I think you look at it and you say that they believe in Stidham. I think that that's it. They didn't want to necessarily go and get someone in the mid-rounds that would be a quote-unquote competitor for the same job or a threat to Stidham, and that if they're going to go with a young guy, they're going with Stidham. We had a caller last week that said, why would you draft someone like Jake Fromm in the fourth round? That's exactly what you did before. Maybe Belichick believed that. So again, I do think that it absolutely earmarks Stidham as the guy. I don't think there's any question.
So to me, it earmarked Stidham as the guy long-term. Let's still see how this all shakes out this
year. No, right. I would agree. Long term. That's right.
You know, I do wonder if there's just another veteran shoe to drop. And, what's the thing you keep reporting today, Murray, that there's still no interest in Cam Newton? Who's reporting that?
Jeff Howe. Jeff Howe of The Athletic reporting Patriots have not shown interest in signing Newton. And they, of course, signed the two undrafted quarterbacks over the weekend.
Okay. So to me, if they had drafted, even a Jake Fromm in the fourth round, I think that signals there's some question about Stidham long term. I think what I take out of the weekend is that they believe Stidham in time will be the guy. And that's what they believe. Whether they're right or wrong, we'll find out. And I don't know if they're super convinced of it, but that's just how they feel right now, that in time Stidham will be the guy. I'm still not sure they feel that way about him this year. And, I think we still have to see how that shakes out. We still have to see what veterans shake out. It started to solidify itself a little bit. I guess Jameis Winston is signing a one-year deal in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And, now that we're after the draft, these dominoes should fall. Let's see. Let's see if Cincinnati does hang on to Andy Dalton. Let's see if, Cam Newton's price drops so much that the Patriots don't make a call. I'm not as convinced of that. But I do think that this tells you that long-term they believe Stidham is the guy. And that's good news. I think that's, overall good news because hopefully he is the guy. It's best for them if he's the guy short and long. And you don't have to spend any money or waste any time on a veteran who's not here long-term. That's, the only reason you would do that, waste short-term 1 year on a veteran, is because Stidham's not ready. And, that's the only reason you would do that. And you don't want to tank. And which I'm fully in favor of. I'm not tanking. I don't want a 4-12 season. I'm not tanking for Trevor. I'm not doing any of that. I'm winning the division. And that should still be the goal of the Patriots. And if Stidham isn't good enough, if you don't think Stidham is good enough to get you 9 or 10 wins, then they should sign a veteran. And that's where I put that. But I think long-term they feel Stidham is the guy.
The only question to me is whether they think Stidham could be ready at any point during the season. And so if they think he's going to be ready, say, halfway through, then I don't know that it makes sense to go get Newton.
Right.
You might be better off saying, no, we'll fight through it with Hoyer for 6 to 8 games or whatever it is, and then we'll pass the baton and move on, because otherwise you're going to have an unhappy Cam Newton. If you're going to go get a guy like Newton, you got to commit to him for the year.
Yeah, and I just don't think that they're going to do that. I mean, they want guys that know the system. That's why they brought back Brian Hoyer. So I would hate it, but if Stidham's not ready, then it is going to be Hoyer that starts this season.
And I'm fine with that, too. What I don't want to, I can't say it enough. I have no interest in 4-12 and, being at the top of the draft next year to take a chance on another quarterback up there. That scares the crap out of me. It just, God, that scares me. Now you're sort of like at the mercy of this quarterback draft in the top five working out. It's like if Joe Burrow can't play, Cincinnati is porked, and they're porked for a generation. You know what I mean? Like they're porked.
Of course.
They're porked for at least a half dozen years, if not more. And, you know, who else went up there? Miami, if Tua doesn't work, they got to go. So it's like you have to give him a couple of years because you've drafted him first overall or in the top five. So if he's not ready year one, you try him again in year two. And if it's not year two, you probably give him year three. And now you've sucked three straight years, and now you've got to start all over with the next guy. God, that scares the crap out of me. Scares the living crap out of me. And I'd feel that way. Even though I like the Tua draft pick to Miami, they're kind of in the same boat. Cincinnati's in the same boat. The Chargers are now in the same boat. You're beholden. If this guy can't play, you've wasted, I mean, let's just say at least 5 years, because you're going to give that guy 2 to 3 to succeed or fail, and then you have to start all over. And, you know, I think Tampa and Tennessee are in the same spot. Now, they've been able to figure it out otherwise, but at that position, you know, it's a 5-year process till they get to the next thing.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's the length of the contract, right? I mean, again, you're going to have the guy for four in an option year if you take him in the first round. And so pretty much you're going to ride that out. Now, look, I like the way Miami is doing it, or the way it feels like Miami is doing it, better than Cincinnati, because I think they're going to bring in Tua. They're going to play Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they're going to just let Tua kind of, you know, groom his way in. And to me, that makes me, you know, I think your chances are of success are a little bit better doing it that way than taking a guy like Burrow and throwing him to the Wolves.
I just don't want to be that team. I just don't want to be that team. I don't want a lost season on top of it. And I don't want to be that team. And I don't think, I'll just say it again, you don't need to be that team when Bill Belichick is your coach. So there's a resetting the thought on the quarterbacks. Here's Sean in Marlborough. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, guys, I have a pass thought, but quickly, the best thing I heard in the draft was, this guy has a few armed robbery charges, but looks really smooth on the field. That's what you get in the fifth round. That was, it just made me laugh. As far as the quarterbacks, Murray, I was the guy that tweeted. It was hyperbole. I was exaggerating about not watching the Pats, but even if you have Brady in his prime, let's say Stidham is the next guy. I actually was the one that predicted the Pats drafting Stidham. Even if he's going to be the next guy, even if Fromm only has a 1% chance of being a successful NFL quarterback, you have Brian Hoyer as your backup. You take a quarterback that has even the slightest potential to be a possible starting quarterback over a kicker in the fifth round. Look at the Dolphins, the Bills, the Jets, the Browns over the last 20 years. I would have taken two quarterbacks plus Stidham over a kicker in the fifth round.
Okay, Murray?
I wouldn't, and it feels like to me that they believe in Stidham. That's my biggest takeaway from the weekend. They're telling all of you, F off. We didn't want Eason or Fromm or anyone else. Stidham's the guy. Deal with it.
It was definitely an F off kind of weekend by Bill Belichick. I'll reset those thoughts here in a second. Alan in California. Go ahead, Alan.
Yep, I'm falling on the grenade. It's Trevor Lawrence, the monster out of Clemson, 6'6". Bill wants to coach him. That's what I got.
No interest. No interest in losing that many games. No interest in putting all my eggs in one basket like that at the top of the draft on a quarterback. No interest. None. I hope you're wrong, Alan.
I just think people are so wrong when it comes to this. Because, again, look at all the evidence. Belichick's been in the league now for how many years, Mike? I mean, 40 years?
Yeah.
Like, okay, now he hasn't been a head coach that whole time. He's never taken a quarterback higher than Garoppolo at 62. His Bobo buddy, Michael Lombardi, did a podcast last week in which he talked about the dangers of taking a quarterback in the first round, particularly higher up in the first round. Like, all of the elements, and Belichick's ego will not allow him to sit there and tank, because then he's admitting that the quarterback's more important than the coach.
Exactly. So that's one reason, ego-driven reason. And again, I don't want him to do it either. But he, you know, if you go 4-12, then, you know, see, Bill is crap without Tom Brady. That's the last thing that he wants. And two, if he then drafts a quarterback up high, he's admitting that it's all about the quarterback.
Correct.
His whole thing here is to prove he can win without Brady. He can win without the quarterback. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. And I'm with him on it. I want him to succeed with it. And if he did anything other than that, it would go counter to it. So, no. He does not. He wants to catch Shula. Never mind that. And 4-12 doesn't help him catch Shula on the all-time wins list. But he doesn't want to prove Brady right. And 4-12 proves Brady right. Never mind then turning around and drafting a quarterback in the top five, where he then says it's all about the quarterback. You know, you do have to worry, though, if he's taking it too far in the other direction. As Ben Volen wrote, Maz, Volin wrote today in the Globe, "I just hope that Belichick's decisions at quarterback aren't driven by ego. Now that Brady is gone, Belichick will be under a microscope to see if he can rebuild the Patriots again and if he can be a consistent winner without Brady. Hopefully Belichick is not choosing Stidham just to prove to the world that he can win with any old quarterback. If Stidham is the best man for the starting job, then so be it. It would be a great story if he pans out. But Belichick is putting a lot of hype and pressure on Stidham by not drafting or acquiring another significant quarterback this offseason." So let me just stop there. Do you think Belichick's putting a lot of pressure on him by not drafting a quarterback, or would he be putting more pressure on him if he did draft a quarterback? See what I'm saying?
It's a different kind of pressure, though. One is that, you know, the kid doesn't have a ton of room to fail now. Again, assuming that he's the guy in 2020, and I'll allow for the fact that it could be Hoyer to start the year. But I also think in terms of his long-term development, to have competition would be a good thing. So pressure would help there a little bit because you don't want him to get, you know, lazy and just presumptuous in that role.
Okay. So he says it's either that or Belichick just doesn't believe the quarterback position is as important as everyone else does.
So I think it's more that. And this is where it worries me, because this is where, again, Bill can often be right, and not usually is. But sometimes he goes too far. He thought he could win the Super Bowl without Malcolm Butler. He thought he could do it.
Yeah, in that position, I think he thinks he can win with anybody.
At quarterback, you mean?
Yeah, quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is the danger, though, is that, you know, at some point you're just taking it too far. You still got to have players, and there still have to be guys who can execute when the game's on the line. And so it's one thing to say it's a system. It's another thing to say it's the players, when the truth is it's really a combination of the two.
But, boy, talk about a sea change. And from 2014, that era, when he drafts Garoppolo, he drafts Brissett, he'll come out and he'll tell you, you know, "I don't think you want to have one quarterback on your team. I don't think that's very responsible to the entire team or the organization." You know how horny he was to draft quarterbacks then, and how important that position was, and how you just can't leave that room too thin, and you can't leave that position too thin, and it's so important. You know, when he's trying to get Brady the hell out of Dodge, there's nothing more important than drafting quarterbacks. Now that Brady's gone, screw it. I don't need any quarterbacks. It's like, just, you know, how fraudulent that was back in 2014.
Oh, but that's him, though. He'll twist it always to fit his argument completely. Again, now the quarterback position doesn't matter at all, and it's completely overrated. It's Bill just manipulating what the facts are.
We continue with your thoughts here on a Reentry Monday right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Patriots are finally participating in the draft process. Let's see where they go.
With the 37th pick in the 2020 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Kyle Duggar, defensive back, Lenore Ryan.
Mel, this guy was a freak show. You just don't see his kind of athleticism at this level.
Dominant player at a lower level of competition, as was Jeremy Chinn coming out of Southern Illinois, who could be a pick coming up in the second or third round. Kyle Duggar did it a variety of ways with that kind of linebacker size, 6'1", nearly 220 pounds in the return game. He was outstanding as well, phenomenal. 6 punt return touchdowns in his career, 10 career interceptions. At that level, to be a high NFL draft pick, you got to jump off the tape. You got to be a guy who's a stick-out performer, special team on the back end in that secondary. Kyle Duggar was throughout his career at Lenore Ryan. That's what makes you an early second-round draft choice, bud.
Simply put, Mel, he was a playmaker. He's a guy that can come down and make plays, 10 picks throughout his career. You talk about the 6 punt returns for a touchdown. He's a guy from a playmaking standpoint. He's always going to be around the ball. You can insert him down. He's going to make sure that if you need a play on your defense, he can make the play, Trey.
Mel Kiper, Booger McFarland, ESPN. Analysis of the Kyle Duggar pick. They have no clue, none, zero. None of you do. None of us do. None of us. But I do know what type of pick that was. First of all, what did you make of that selection, Maz and Murray?
I was surprised by... I'm sorry, Murray, you go.
No, go ahead, Maz. You already started.
I was surprised that they took a safety with their first pick. And again, I understand that there's a long-term need there. But to me, there were other more pressing areas. And given some of the players that were on the board when they drafted in the first round, I thought that they might go linebacker. I told you, I wanted offensive line. In the end, you guys were right. They were going to go defense first. But I thought you'd see linebacker there. They took a safety again. I was surprised, let alone a kid from Division II.
Yeah, I thought there were more pressing needs, which they addressed later, linebacker specifically, but that just felt early to me. And I get that guys like Pat Chung have been beat up in recent years, and they're a little long in the tooth, but I don't know. That was their first pick? This kid from Lenoir Ryan, a Division II school, and he's almost like 25 years old.
I was just about to bring that up. He's one of the oldest players in the draft, if that matters to you. He's 24.
So, I don't know. Maybe he could play, but I think that one's a head-scratcher.
I thought the pick was ridiculous. Ridiculous! And this isn't to judge whether he'll be able to play or not. I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. They don't know. Who knows? But it was ridiculous because the failures he's had with that kind of player at that spot in the draft is just... It's become so well known and been put in his face so badly that half of me wonders if he did it just to spite us. And when I say us, the experts, anyone who would put it in his face and again, some of these are corners, some of these are safeties, but the second round defensive back, Terrence Wheatley, Darius Butler, Razai Dowling, Tavon Wilson, Jordan Richards, Cyrus Jones, Duke Dawson, Juwan Williams. That's 8. 0 for 8. He's basically 0 for his last 8. And Juwan Williams is still to be determined, so maybe 0-7-1, but he ain't a player yet. And he just got busted for drugs in the offseason. So I don't know. I'm not super optimistic. 0 for his last 8 drafting defensive backs in the second round. And what does he do? And it's now getting put in his face, right? It's now become so common. It's being put in his face. He has the pre-draft press conference 3 weeks ago, and Kern asked him directly about, you've done self-scouting. You look at yourself all the time, all the things you do well, don't do well. Have you gone back and looked at any commonality in your second-round picks and your bust rate in the second round? And Bill gets all defensive and mentions Matt Light and Rob Gronkowski, the guys he's hit on. So you know Bill's back is up just even answering the question. But so it's in his face now. Your track record of drafting defensive backs in the second round blows. It blows. And now he gets to the most important draft he's had in years, and he trades down to the second round to take another one of these tweener defensive backs? I mean, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He might even be, and maybe he'll be ridiculously right. But don't tell me that doesn't reek of Bill. Like, that is so Bill, it's not even funny.
Oh, again, give everybody the finger. You don't think I can pick defensive backs? Here you go. Here's the finger. And not only that, I'm going to take a kid out of Division II, which, by the way, if he walked out of the room after making the pick, it was to take his pants off. Because it was seriously, like, tell me how excited he was to take a kid out of Division II.
Loves it. Absolutely loves it. Because it's all about him, then. It's right? It's... He found the guy from Lenoir Ryan, wherever that effing school is. I'm going to remember the player's name, but I'm purposely not going to remember the school. Okay, so it all becomes look where he found this kid out of this school against that competition, and this also ties in Maz to the contract thing and like getting guys to buy. This is how he gets guys to buy in. You owe your career to me.
Correct.
I picked you out of your crappy Division II school. I brought you into the pay. You know, it's like the kid's now beholden to him because Bill plucked him out of this and maybe took him a little bit early and, sort of took him out of his circumstance into his current circumstance. And this ties into the whole thing. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me. After
See, I,
all
I
those
always...
failures doing that, you do it again? You double down on it?
Yeah, see, I always thought there's a little bit of that in a lot of the moves he makes. Like the whole idea of the 6th and 7th round picks that they load up on in the draft every year. And the undrafted free agents, the credit ends up going to the coach. And we don't put a lot of emphasis necessarily. He doesn't get credit for the guys that he hits in the first round. And we never remember the 6th and the 7th because nobody is supposed to hit in the 6th and the 7th. And even Malcolm Butler, I told you, the contract stuff. I think it's like, I made you. And I think it factors in sometimes when he starts having problems with some of these guys.
So it's a fair point. But that, I just think, have all those failures making that kind of pick over so long a period of time, oh for his last eight, and instead of saying, you know what, I'm going to take a look at a different spot this year at a different point in the draft because we haven't hit on these kind of players, and say, he says, nope, in fact, I'm not only going to do it, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it even worse than you ever thought I could possibly do it. A player you never heard of from a school you never heard of, a guy who hasn't played anywhere close to the level of competition he's going to be playing in now. So suck on that. How does that taste? And I thought that felt the tone for the whole weekend.
I told you on Saturday, it reached the point where I said, "What? Why do I feel like every time Bill makes a pick, he's giving everybody the finger?" I threw it out there on Twitter over the weekend, and that's what it felt like. The thing felt like it was just one statement after the next about how stupid, how S-T-O-O-P-I-D everybody else is.
I'm all for being the contrarian, but boy, I think he did it to a fault. Oh, I can't draft defensive backs in the second round? Here's one. Suck on that. Oh, this is supposed to be the greatest receiver class ever? I'm not going to draft one. How does that taste? Oh, the tight ends are supposed to blow? I'm going to draft two and trade up for both. I'm going to actually fall in love with these crappy tight, your alleged crappy tight ends so badly, I'm going to send the Jets 2 4th-round picks to trade up for one. How does that smell? Sniff it. Like, that was the whole thing. That was the whole weekend. Anyway, Stan in Medfield, your thoughts.
What's going on, guys? You actually kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but yeah, you wasted that second round pick on a player that plays for D2, who also in the scouting report says that he lacks awareness and instinctiveness. I'm like, so he lacks awareness and instinctiveness in D2? You drafted him? The only thing we didn't get from Belichick this year in a draft was him picking a player from the Army or the Navy this year. It would have been great.
He wanted to. Didn't the Dolphins take a Navy player at some point in this draft?
I don't know.
Me neither. I don't know either.
Miami might have selected someone from the Navy. They might have selected Navy. Was it the Navy quarterback? You know, in that system is a glorified running back. But I wonder if
Malcolm Perry.
Okay, is that the quarterback?
I think it is, yeah.
So when Bill says it wasn't the design not to pick a quarterback.
Yeah, it was. It was a Navy quarterback.
So because Bill said this, right? It wasn't by design that we didn't take the quarterback. It's not
correct.
It's not by design. Does that mean he designed to take a quarterback and the guy was just scooped up before he had a chance? And could he possibly have been talking about the effing Navy option quarterback?
Man, knowing him.
See, most people would take that to mean that, you know, he wanted someone in the 4th round like Easton, and Easton went before he could get him, or that he was going to take Fromm in the 6th.
Nope.
But it never occurred to me that he could have been talking about someone from one of the service academies.
Nope, he was talking about the quarterback from Navy, and Flores got in front of him. That's what happened. Guy in Boston. Go ahead, Guy.
Mike, I don't know why the Crafts haven't told Belichick to F off and get rid of the whole family. And number two, I can't understand why you still think they're going to win the division. Are you sniffing Lysol? And when you see that I was correct, I want an apology on the phone. I want you to say, guy from Boston, you were 100% right.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You'll never get an apology. I'll say you're right. I'm wrong. That's fine. But I ain't going to apologize for having a take, for crying out loud. What's the thing that he said before?
No, if you do apologize, then we'll know you are sniffing Lysol.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm injecting it straight into my veins.
Kraft should get rid of Belichick and the family.
Right. No. There's something I was just going to say about that. But anyway, well, speaking of this, it does tie into it, sort of. And that's the kicker. A pretty interesting kicker that they got there in the 5th round. Let's hit on that after Murray gives us an update. But first, a reminder, Reentry Monday is presented by East Boston Savings Bank, Mass.
Yep, maybe you're looking to finance a home mortgage, a commercial real estate property, or maybe you're just looking for a free checking account. Visit EBSB.com. That's East Boston Savings Bank. Getting it done since 1848. Here's Murray with all the draft fallout.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Milger and Mavs.
I love it.
You were right, Mavs.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Your tattoo, or at least one of them, it matches a group called the Three Percenters. What's the story there? Is that something you associate with?
No, I got that tattoo when I was a teenager, and I have a lot of family in the military, and yeah, I thought it stood for a military support symbol at the time, and obviously it evolved into something that I do not want to represent. And when I look back on it, I should have done way more research before I put any mark or symbol like that on my body, and it's not something I ever want to represent, so it will be covered.
All right, so let's get to this story. The kicker they drafted. Pronounce his name for me, Murray.
Rohrwasser, I believe is how you say it. Is the last name?
Try it again.
Rohrwasser.
Rohrwasser?
Yeah, Rohrwasser, I think it is right.
Rohrwasser. Okay. So has a tattoo on his arm of, I don't know how best to describe it, alt-right paramilitary sort of, organization or group, anti-government group, right-wing gun rights, anti-government group. So he was asked about it after he was drafted by the New England Patriots, and that was his answer. What are your thoughts on this story, Murray? I'll start with you.
Can he kick field goals? Does he have ice in his veins? Can he hit a 55-yarder? That's really all that matters to me. And where I get my backup is the quickness in trying to ruin this kid's life before he even attempts a kick. And it's all from the usual suspects, and shame on me for playing into it and getting mad about it in the first place. It's all the Jemele Hills and dead spins of the world, and I just find it contrived. The kid likes some tweets by Trump. He's got a tattoo from a right-wing group that, based on what I've read up on them, they love guns, they hate the government, and he's automatically a racist? So run him out of town and ruin his life because he had the tattoo on him? Like, you hate his political leanings. I get it. It doesn't align with your ideological thought, and that's the world we live in now. You're either with us, against us, and if you're against us, you can F off. And if we think this is something that is hateful, we're going to try to ruin your life. But could it just be that the kid is a gun nut and doesn't like the government, and that's all it was?
Well, so look, my read on the guy, and I'll be honest, my initial reaction was, wow, they're going to bring this kind of element into their locker room for a kicker? For a kicker. That was my initial reaction. And so when I read about him, I saw the photos and the tattoos, and, I just kind of soaked it all in. I felt one way. When I hear him, I feel a little differently. And so now, look, at the end of the day, all that matters is he can kick and he doesn't cause him any problems. Okay, so was I surprised, given everything that's out there about him, that they would extend a little bit because, you're potentially inviting problems into your locker room? Yes. When I hear him, I'm less concerned about it. And at the end of the day, I don't really give two craps about what his political beliefs are. My guess is the Patriots made that apparent to him and said, we don't care what your political beliefs are anyway, just keep him out of the locker room.
Okay, I mean, there's political beliefs, but what if, and again, I don't know everything about this 3% group, so I'm just saying what if. What if it is a bad news hate group, a potentially violent hate group? I mean, they did have members there in Charlottesville protecting the Nazi march, that whole mess there in Charlottesville. They did have members, and again, like most of these groups, are not, I would say super well organized, but they did have people claiming to be 3%ers there protecting the Nazis in the march through Charlottesville. So I mean, what if it's not just their Trump people, Murray? What if they are, hateful, potentially violent, well-armed, fringe, wackadoodle, alt-right group?
And I don't doubt for a second because that you had some members there at that at Charlottesville. You got some bad people in that group. They also, the head of the group, at least on their website, because I wanted to read up on this as much as I possibly could, they denounced what happened there, which was obviously a horrible thing. But if they can find something in terms of Rohrwasch or whatever the hell you say his name, that he believes in that kind of thing, that he's liking tweets of that nature, that he was happy about that horrific murder there that day, I think too much is being made out of this. Like, if he really believes in that kind of thing and he's that kind of lunatic, then you cut his ass and he shouldn't have a career. Well, but if it's just that he's like, I don't know.
Okay,
like,
whoops, I had that tattoo. I didn't know what that meant. I mean, that's sort of what he's claiming there.
Right.
I mean, he says he got it as a teenager. How old is he? So he's had it for years, right? So, I mean,
it's 2015, I believe, is when he got it. Yeah.
Okay, so 2015. So he's had it for 5 years. And now he says, oh, whoops, that's what that means? I didn't know that. Like, bullcrap. He knows exactly what it means and what it represents, and he's worn it and worn it proudly. And he's saying it now because he knows it's going to, he has to cover it up because his employer is not going to look kindly on it, which is fine, but he could also own it. He could also own it. I don't feel like he's being honest there. I mean, he knows what it is. He obviously believes in it because he put it on his body. He etched it into his body and has kept it there for 5 years. So he knows what it means and he believes in it.
Where he
is. But now it's going to affect his employment. So, I don't know what that is. Woo, yeah, what's that thing? Oh, boy, if I had only known, whoops. Like, come on. That's bull crap.
That's a mistake by him. If he knew, like, he was going to end up in the NFL somehow.
Own it.
Then you should have probably got it covered up a few years ago if you knew this was going to ultimately be a problem.
Own it. Or if you don't believe in what they stand for, have it removed as soon as you find out. But you've had it for 5 years? Come on, I don't believe the guy. But again, to me, that's not even the story. To me, the story is, did the Crafts know? You know, did the Crafts know? I'd be curious to know that. You know, if the three percenters, and I read the same thing you did, Murray, that the leader of the three percenters or whatever, the grand poobah of the three percenters said, he didn't endorse their involvement there or the people who claim to be three percenters and their involvement in Charlottesville that day. Be that as it may, if it does come out that they have supported other hate groups or other Nazi groups or other things like that, did the Crafts know about this? Did Bill know about this? Did they take the time to research the tattoos? Because they should know from their own experience that these tattoos means, you know, in a lot of cases you get a tattoo, it means something. And you can find out about someone's belief or what they've been up to by reading their tattoos. They now know this. And they've, you know, run into this before, unfortunately. So it feels like, you know, he certainly knew. He was, you know, he was coached on the answer or knew what to say about the answer. So it's certainly been addressed on his end. Did the Patriots fully know what that was? Did the Crafts fully know what that is? And is this now a done deal and it's a non-story because they talked to him about it? They know exactly what it's about. He's going to cover it up and it's nothing to see here? Or did the Crafts find out about it when we found out about it? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. And I was just looking quickly, too, because I don't know which one he said. You know, how old is he? He got it when he was 15. He's 23. So, you know, and oddly enough, his date of birth, you know, I had to fish around to try to find it. So I don't know. The whole thing makes me a little uneasy. We are talking about a sport where you got 53 guys in a locker room from places all over the place. And, you know, you have to, they all have to get along and reasonably well, at least in a professional environment, and be able to go to work on the same field every day and believe in each other. And so I always worry about that sort of thing being a divisive element on a team. But hearing him talk, it felt like the Patriots got to him and made sure that he said all the right things out of the gate.
Political beliefs are one thing. And then there's certain groups that sort of go beyond that.
Well, sure.
And so if he's affiliated with something that goes beyond that, it feels like you bought it. Like, oh, what's that thing? Yeah, you know, I got that as a teenager. If I knew what it meant, you know, I don't want to be associated. You've had it for 8 years? So you don't get to play that game. You know, there's plenty of guys. This comes out now, right? Josh Hader, the reliever from Milwaukee, is the one that I know of well. But this has happened a lot now where people go back into these guys' Twitter feeds. And when they were in high school or in college, you know, they had racist tweets or some really wrong tweets. And, like, we've seen that a lot. Like, okay, you're a teenager, you're a young guy, you have a bad day or a bad time, or you're in with the wrong crowd, or you're just an idiot as a kid, and you throw out some nasty crap that you shouldn't. Like, we've sort of wrapped our head around that, right? That's happened in a lot of cases. It's another thing when you etch it and you you know, you burn it into your skin and then leave it there for 8 years. You don't get to claim, whoops, just a youthful mistake. You've had it there for 8 years for the whole world to see. That's not the same thing as a bad tweet in high school. That's not the same thing. So,
no, it's not. No,
so his answer
Definitely
to me, not. His answer is bullcrap. Bullcrap. And you can buy it if you want. And I'm not telling you, get rid of the guy or anything, because I don't think people should have jobs or not for their political beliefs. But, you know, if his thing goes beyond a political belief, then that's something to look at. I'm curious if everyone in the organization knows exactly, his involvement with that group and whatever that group is. But he doesn't get to claim, whoops, oh, what's that? So there's a thought on that. Long commercial-free segment is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Is there anything on that group? That's a position you guys have gone back to with Byrus and Jordan Richards and Duke Dawson and last year Juwan. Is there any philosophy in the second round that you have that says, hey, let's go and try and get some matchup type of corners or a corner or a safety or a defensive back who brings something at that point?
Yeah, well, then you got guys like Matt Light and Jamie Collins and Rob Gronkowski, and there's plenty of second rounders that have had pretty good careers here. So we'll see how it goes. But look, each draft's different, every year is different, each player is different. So I think to sit here and rehash the 2015 draft or the 2006 draft or whatever it is. Again, they're fundamentals of the process, and we always try to improve those. We'll try to do the best job that we can this year in every round.
And that set the tone for the whole weekend. That was classic. The Belichick's, and it's the first thing I thought of when they drafted Kyle Duggar out of the Division II school that no one ever heard of. On what was that, Friday night, I go back and I think about the pre-draft press conference when Tom Curran of NBC Sports asked Bill in so many words, why do you suck so bad in the second round? Have you ever taken a look, Bill? You do all this self-scouting on yourselves. You ever gone back and looked at, they're all defensive backs in the second round. Any commonality to that and why you're having so much trouble in the second round? And so what does Bill do? Bill gets to draft night and he says, oh, Tommy, you didn't like us drafting second round defensive backs? Well, not only am I not going to acknowledge our problem there, not only am I not going to answer your question, I'm going to draft another one. And not only am I going to draft another one, you thought Tavon Wilson was a reach. You thought Jordan Richards was a nobody. Wait till you see what I come up with on this one. This is going to be a player you never heard of from a school you didn't even know existed that had the sport of football. And that was just the FU tour that this weekend was for Bill Belichick at the draft. I thought he was a contrarian to a fault. I know that's odd coming from me. But boy, as Maz said, every pick felt like he was giving someone the finger. Oh, you don't like my second round picks at defensive back? Suck it. Here's another one. How does that taste? Meanwhile, it did
when you really think about it. It's exactly what it felt like. Like, yeah, I think you should. Yeah, Bill, I think you should take everything other than a safety here. Yeah, is that what you think? Yeah, I'm going to take a safety. F yo!
Deepest receiver group ever. Oh, really? I don't think any of them can play. I'm not drafting a single one. Meanwhile, the tight ends suck. Oh, really? I'm going to draft two, trading up for both of them. I'm going to give the Jets 2 4th round picks, in fact, to trade up to take a tight end. So it was a complete sort of, it was King Richard's draft, as I said earlier. It just sort of felt like that to me. It was ridiculous. I thought it was a ridiculous draft. Now, that doesn't mean these guys can play or can't play. I don't know. You don't know. They don't know. Get back to me in 2 years. Maybe they'll play. Maybe they won't. But the style of pick that he made, the rationale of these picks, oh, my Lord. Talk about Richard. It was just Richard picks everywhere, I thought.
I mean, really, again, across the board. You know, bad tight end draft, I'll take two of them within 10 picks. So, how do you like that one? You think I need a quarterback? Not taking one. Sorry. Wrong again.
You don't like me dinking around the board, trading up and down the second and third round with a million different trades? Too bad I'm going to do it again. Even though no one else is trading, I'm going to make 4 million trades up and down the board in the second and third round. Just because I know you don't like it. And that's how that whole weekend felt. I'm going to make a pick because I know you won't like it. You
don't totally.
You don't like me trading out of the first round? Oh, you don't like sitting around all night watching everyone else make picks, waiting for us to get on the board at the end of the first round just to have me trade out? You don't like it? Tough suck on this. Here comes another trade out straight in your face. How does that taste? How does that taste, Patriots fans? We're trading out for another Flyer defensive back in the second round. Suck on that. And that was the whole weekend, it felt like. So that's my top draft thought, resetting it. Your thoughts on everything, as promised. Casey on the South Shore. Go ahead, Casey.
I totally agree with you, Felger. It's so infuriating, the move after move, for moves next year never happens. I definitely think Belichick gets off on all the moves. I like to refer to him as the draft diddler. I think that's why we saw the dog sitting at the table with the computer, because he's in the bathroom relieving himself. Because, I traded up to trade back to trade down to trade up.
It's really just playing with yourself, all those trades in the second, third, and fourth round. It is. You put two here to move up there, then you take that one, you package it with another one to move down to the next year, then you take the one the next year, you package it with the fourth to move up in the third, then you take your second, you trade it for next year's third, you get to next year's third, you package it with the fourth to move up in the second. I think you end up with almost the exact same amount of players, but they're either at 98 versus 102, and it all doesn't matter, because if you pick Jordan Richards again, what's the diff? What is the diff? And he did that all weekend as well. And again, I will remind you, because no one else will. Last year's failed second-round pick, Juwan Williams. They traded up for him in the second round. No one remembers this. No one holds these moves against Bill. He moved from 56 to 45, giving up a effing third-rounder. He gave up a third-rounder just to trade up and get Juwan Williams. The year before, Duke Dawson, already gone, lasted 1 year. That was another trade-up. He traded up from 63 to 56, giving up another fourth-round pick in the process to take Duke Dawson. Fails. In which you lost extra mid-round picks because of it. The second tight end you took on Saturday or whatever in the third round, Friday, 2 fourth-round picks to the Jets. No one seems to log those. And I think at the end it's all a wash. It's all a wash. Sometimes he picks the right guy, sometimes he doesn't. And all those trades are just pleasuring himself, really. And no one else, frankly. Nate in New Bedford. Go ahead, Nate, on the quarterback thing.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, real quick, I think you guys are both wrong. I said, why wouldn't you draft a top of the draft quarterback if you got a guy like, you know, John Elway or, Peyton Manning or even Andrew Luck? You know, that guy, Trevor Lawrence, they've been talking up, you know, the past couple years about him. He's not just one of these guys that, hey, Joe Burrow, he had a great year. Okay, he's number one overall pick.
No, no.
I mean, they've been talking about this guy, so.
Sure. If I have the worst record in the league and the first overall pick and Joe Burrow's sitting there, I'm taking him. And if I have the worst record in the league and Peyton Manning is sitting there, I take him. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't want to be the team that, well, first of all, I don't want to have the worst record in the league. I want them to win the division next year and have a real season. So I don't ever want to be the worst team in the league, one. And two, if I'm not the worst team in the league and I want that quarterback, I don't want to be the team that has to give up 3 first-round picks to go get him. I don't want to do that and put all my eggs in that basket. I shouldn't have to do that with Bill Belichick as my coach, Maz.
Well, the other thing is, how come the caller only mentions the quarterbacks that worked at number one overall?
Thank you.
Look, Elway was great. Manning was great. Who's the other one? He mentioned Luck. Luck was good. Obviously retired early, but I'll tell you what, all things considered, I'd have taken Andrew Luck first that year, too. But how many guys could we rattle off that were number one in the draft that weren't great?
Jameis Winston, Sam Bradford, Tim Couch. You know, we did it the other day. There's a billion who didn't work out up there.
Yeah, and again, and that's just focusing on one overall. So I just think, look, if you're telling me that John Elway's available in the draft, of course, who wouldn't want John Elway? Again, but in order to get it, this guy makes it sound like, you're just sucking up, you go 0-16, and then you go get the player. And I they'll never do that with Belichick. I have completely eliminated this whole idea from my brain. Not that there's, you know, a lot of room in there anyway.
Mass, but fans love it, though, right? Like, I mean, how many calls do we get?
Oh, gosh.
Thing?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, you got to go get Lawrence. And, I just... I think there is 0.0 chance of that happening. Zero. Because the Patriots just won't do it. It's not in Belichick's makeup. And let's say they were to go, you know, the 4-12 and be in the running for the top pick. I don't think it's Belichick's MO to mortgage things, you know, mortgage a whole bunch of picks to go get a quarterback in the first round. He's never done it. I don't think he ever will.
Meanwhile, my favorite thing I read all weekend, I'll give it to you right off the top of the hour after Murray's 90-second update. There was a Patriots transaction today, fairly significant Patriots transaction. You'll hear it here, and then we're right back. Again, no spots.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.